You are listening to Grandpa Lampshade on RadioArian.com.
That's right, it's already that time. Once again, time to get cozy, time to sit down with Grandpa Lampshade. That's right, it's time for the Church of the Lampshade. Thank you all very much for joining us this week for installment number 13 of the Church of the Lampshade show. I want to, of course, as always, a special shout out and appreciation for the seven of you who've sent support this week. If you want to be a part of supporting what we're continuing to try to do here, all that information is down at the bottom of the page. I'm not going to sit here and go through it all. You just scroll down to the bottom of the description of the page. It's all right there. We've got snail mail. We've got Bitcoin. If you're doing Litecoin or something like that, let me know. I'll get you an address. All support is very much appreciated. Also, email address, grandpalampshade1@gmail.com. If you want to give me a shout, give me a holler. Or if you have any questions, comments, you'll get an answer one way or the other. I'll either answer you an email, or if it's something I think might apply to a lot of people, we'll use it here on the show. We haven't officially brought back questions and comments, but it's kind of back in that. Like I say, I'll be glad to, I'm always glad to visit with folks. So even if I just kind of give you my thoughts on it in email, if it's something I just feel like maybe a lot of people might apply to a lot of people, we'll cover it here on the show. A reminder, those of you sending support, be sure and include an email. I've got a new book written. I'd love to give you a copy. And that having been said, I've already sent out copies to a lot of people. And apparently I guess I screwed it up because there's been a lot of miscommunication. In your email, there is an attachment of the book. I know there's a link in the email. The link is not, that's not for your copy of the book. Look, there's an attachment there. And I've had several people now, they're like, well, no, the book is in there. You have a PDF attachment. You've got your free copy of the book. The link is something entirely different. So I guess moving forward, I'm going to have to do that differently because again, I've had several people miss that and it seemed to be some sort of miscommunication, but yeah, all supporters, you're going to like this new copy or this new book rather. It's a little better than my first attempt at writing. I took some lessons and learned it, and it is a Christian themed book. So if you're one of our non-believer listeners, you may not get that much out of it, but either way, if you're a crypto supporter, let me know, hey, sent you X amount of Bitcoin or whatever, and I'd like a copy of the book. I'll be glad to get you a copy either way. So thank you for joining us this week, folks. As always, it's great to get down and get to sit down and visit with all of you. As we continue to sail our way through the high seas of clown world, it's always good to sit down and sit around and have a reasonable discussion, of sanity, because we're in this continuing world of clown world insanity. Speaking of clown world, what did we accomplish this week in the world of Trump? Well, let's see. We had a big announcement from President Trump this past week that he is breaking up the big social media companies and basically making it illegal for people to be banned from these platforms and to be banned from banking, be banned from PayPal simply for their political beliefs. Sorry, not really. Just kidding. That was... No, not really. But we did have some action from President Trump. He's getting making AIDS prevention drugs free for a lot of homosexuals. And we're sailing the Navy to saber rattle at Iran because Israel. So there, honk, honk. There's our big accomplishments from Trump for this week. Still trying to figure out what to do with all the people swarming up to the border. We haven't quite worked that out yet because McCourt's, but free AIDS drugs for homosexuals, and we're sending the Navy to threaten Iran. So more of the same. I don't know at this point. We were talking. There was a bit of a discussion on social media earlier this week, which of course yours truly was in the big middle. By the way, I'm in a little better mood this week. I don't know how many of y'all noticed last week. I record the show. I generally try to record the show on Saturdays. And man, last week's show, the Friday before, the day before on that Friday, I mean, I was in one of the just a horrible black pill funk for a number of reasons I'm not going to get into here, but it was just in a horrible black pill funk. And you could say I had a hangover from that. Not a literal hangover from drinking, but a hangover from my black pill funk on Saturday morning when I recorded the show. And I did. I fretted for days. I'm like, oh, I don't think the show was up to par. Oh, I don't think the show was, yeah, I don't think I did as good a job as I should have with the show. I was just in too much of a funk. But it was nice. I did hear from several of you that were like, well, I love the show. You were dropping some bombs on this show. So I don't know. I guess it came out okay. I hope so. If not, you know, hey, I apologize. Believe it or not, even Grandpa Lampshade has his bout. You know, I told somebody the other day, you know, I really do. Those of you that spend time, we're just going to set aside here on the Christian topic part, those of you that set the time aside to at least pray for me, it really is appreciated because, yeah, I may look like a solid rock, but even Grandpa Lampshade has days where I struggle in my faith, and it is very much appreciated that to know that y'all are praying for me and trying to keep me propped up. I really do appreciate it. We soldier on. We keep on doing what we do. That's just life. That's the way it works. But no, we were talking on social media the day, you know, people talking about, as usual, Trump, you know, and people that are disgusted with Trump, people that are angry at Trump. And then you have the full on, you know, MAGAtards, as we call them, you know, that just practically worship this guy. And I, which, of course, obviously, I've got a real problem. Once you deify a human being, you know, and start worshiping him practically as a god or something, obviously I think that's retarded. Yeah, but I was pointing out, like, for the 6 millionth time, you know, I always assumed everybody got that Trump was a transitional figure, and before the last presidential campaign, people were openly talking about, you know, Trump being a transitional figure to what we can work towards next, and I thought everybody was on the same page. And then it was like Trump gets elected, and all of a sudden everybody's like God Emperor stuff. And we've covered this before, but it just amazes me how many people, and that's the only way you really get disappointed by Trump is realize, you know, thinking that he was anything more than a transitional figure. He was always a sieve net. He was always a sieve net, a business kind of guy. And I mean, you're only going to get so much out of the guy. I mean, if you were expecting, you know, repatriations and Mein Kampf, I mean, it's just, that's just not realistic. It was never realistic. It was never my expectation. And then somebody asked me, well, what about the idea that, you know, we would have been better off with Hillary because it would have, you know, she would have pushed so hard that, you know, basically this would have caused people in the streets. It would have caused a revolution. And my question is, from who? The conservatives? The conservatives are going to get out on the street because Hillary is elected? Not going to happen. I mean, seriously, these conservatives are always talking about, you know, oh, don't do that. That'll be it. You don't want, I've got my guns. You know, they're law abiders. And once, you know, if they pass a law, they're going to abide by it. All their shit talking on the internet about, I'll claim my guns were lost in a boating accident. Well, A, if you think the feds are going to fall for that lame ass lie, I mean, come on. The feds are going to show up and say, it's gun confiscation day. And you're going to say, I'm sorry, I was boating and all my guns fell overboard. And they're going to be like, yeah, you're like the 6 millionth asshole that's tried to tell us this story. Fine. We've got a warrant. We're coming into your house to search your shit. And while we're here, we're going to seize all your stuff. And we've locked up your bank accounts. So if you happen to remember where your guns are at, they're right over here, sir. They're right over here in my safety approved gun cabinet. Let me get my key and take the trigger lock off. And don't worry, I don't have any bump stock silencers or anything else that's already been deemed illegal and that impinged on my Second Amendment rights, but I abided by that law. Here they are. The notion that if Hillary would have got elected, that these people would have somehow, quote unquote, woken up and fired. You would have fired off the 1776 in the spirit of the spirit of 1776 and the conservatives, and they would have taken to the streets with their arsenal of weapons to overthrow Washington, D.C. is just silly. I mean, it would have happened. All we would have wound up with is we would all be officially on a terrorist watch list now, which we probably are anyway. I mean, honestly, we're probably on a list, but at least they're being secretive about it. They're not out bragging that we're all officially on terrorist watch list for our political views. But we would have had that openly with Hillary. And so, you know, yeah, I mean, I think as a net, we sometimes you still, yeah, I mean, evil's still evil. I agree with that. But, you know, this world's not a world of perfect things. And I still think we're better off with Trump than we would have been with Hillary. I don't think, oh, well, if we handed our enemy more ammunition, then things would have been better. I don't see that happening. Another thing that cracks me about conservatives, one of their favorite things to go on about, and yes, I dog on conservatives because they don't stand for anything. One of my goals is, and I'm not hostile towards you as an individual conservative. My actual goal is, in my mocking of you, and yes, I am mocking you, is to make you realize that your position is ridiculous. It's retarded. It's not an actual position to make you understand. And it's not your fault. Look, you've been lied to. You know, I mean, if some scammer, you know, steals your money, it happens. You know, that's not your fault. I mean, you fell for it. They sounded like they were honest, you know, like these people that fall for something. Somebody befriends them and they think they know them. And you're like, man, you know, this person, and they're having a real hard time. And now I found out that their daughter has cancer and I want to help them. They can't afford the medical bills. Their little girl, look, they shaved her head. She's got cancer and they can't afford the treatments. You know, I'm going to try to help them. I set up this GoFundMe page for them and we're going to funnel all this money to help cover their medical costs. And then you find out it was all a lie. They just shaved the kid's head and took the money. It's not your fault. You were trying to do the right thing. So when I mock conservatives, when I mock you as a conservative, I mean, it's just to get you to shake you out of it. I mean, it's not really your fault. These people lied to you. You had good intentions. You trying to save your country. You see that your society's collapsing. At least you see that. At least you don't have the leftist position of, I want to destroy our traditions, our value, our nations, because we're going to build multicultural utopia, even though it's never existed. I mean, at least you don't have that position. You don't have an open, hostile intent towards your nations. But the thing is, your conservative position still just as much works towards the destruction of your nation as the leftist one. The difference is the leftist one is an open attack. Your position is one to where you've been conned into being a doormat, into going along with the ruse while your nation is being destroyed. So to snap you out of that, to get you to quote unquote wake up to that fact, because we on the real right, we tend to have that, you know, we got to wake people up, and I don't know, a lot of people seem to have this notion that people are going to make the jump from conservative to where we're at, like overnight the light is gonna come on, and it's not gonna happen. It's for most people, it's a step-by-step process. If it wasn't a step-by-step process for you, then well, good on you, but you're an outlier, you're not normal people. But for the vast majority of people, it winds up being a step-by-step thing. Though the first step for conservatives is getting them to abandon conservatism, get them to not even like the term conservative. And this happens. I mean, how many leftists today go around and call themselves liberals? Very few. They, oh, liberalism is there, because these aren't liberals. That's another thing that drives me crazy. These conservatives that are stuck in the old paradigm, and they're talking, look at these liberals, what they're doing, these crazy these crazy liberals. You know, they're not liberals. I'm old enough to remember what quote-unquote liberals were like in the 70s and the 80s, and they're not these people. These people are just full-on out-and-out Marxists, you know. Liberals back then were these people that had naive but good intentions. You know, they believed that if we just showed everybody how much we're nice and we could all hold hands and sing Kumbaya or some shit, you know. But they weren't like openly hostile to the country. These are flat-out, I mean, Marxist Bolsheviks, basically, that are attacking your countries. And they're not liberals. I mean, the old liberals are gone. Yeah, but conservatives still cling to the title. There's still a lot of people who cling to the conservative title. One of my goals is to make it an embarrassment, an insult, to be called a conservative, because it should be. conservatism has not ever accomplished anything. Period. Nobody can name anything that conservatism has accomplished. And what you have to understand is that's intentional. Again, it's not an insult against you. You like the person that got scammed out of money trying to help a kid with the thought had cancer. You know, it's not on you. You were conned. But if you continue to go along with the con, even though you know it's a con, then you're just an idiot. So, I mean, the point is to make you understand that it is a con and to get you to abandon it. And when you abandon it, where else are you going to go? Well, you can go join the Marxists now who are openly trying to destroy your country, or you can inch over here with us. So reeling things back in, I think if I can even remember where I was originally going with this before I got off on the side track. One of the favorite things conservatives like to go on about is voter fraud. You know, part of their shit tier memes on Gab is about voter fraud. This voter fraud, we need to clamp down on the voter fraud because the Democrats, the demon rats, those demon rats, you know, they're going to fraud us out of the election with their voter fraud. And they do. I mean, you know, we talked about it during the last presidential campaign. We talked about it a lot. I mean, it's open. Those of us that were part of the Ron Paul stuff back in the day, we're very familiar with voter fraud. I mean, this is like old news to us. We've been out here for a long time. Those of you that suddenly it's current year and you've discovered voter fraud. Well, congratulations, because you know what? The Republicans did voter fraud too. When we were having Republican primaries, when Ron Paul was running and all of a sudden Mitt Romney, who nobody liked, suddenly was receiving this overwhelming support in the primaries. I mean, we were very aware that voter fraud was a thing then. If you think this, the Democrats are the ones that have a lockdown on voter fraud, you're late to the party. So a lot of us have been aware of the voter fraud thing for a long, long time. But we got one of the things, the Democrats and their voter fraud. We got it. One of the things we got to clamp down on is the voter fraud. And it's just silly. Voter fraud. Look, you don't have to worry about voter fraud. I'm not saying it's a good thing. You should just ignore it or you should try to counter it now while you can. That's fine. I doubt it's going to happen. But what you have to understand is voter fraud in this country now has a built-in obsolescence. It's going obsolete. It really is. It's kind of like standard transmissions in vehicles. You know, I mean, at some point in time, it gets phased out. You can't hardly buy a vehicle. It's got a stick anymore. It's great anti-theft if you have one. Somebody went to steal your car and it's like hop in there and it's like, what's this extra pedal down? What's this extra pedal down here? I can't drive this so much. It's like that. And voter fraud has obsolescence built in. It is. It's ultimately going to be obsolete. And why is it going to be obsolete? Because of demographics. All of these conservatives, they love to rail about voter fraud. We got to do so. We fix the voter fraud and then them demon rats, they're not going to be able to steal any elections then. But you have to understand, because of demographics, it's voter fraud at some point becomes obsolete. They don't need it anymore. They won't need the voter fraud because you'll be so outnumbered. I mean, yeah, look, you look at virtually all of Latin America is some form of corrupt socialism on some level or another. I mean, you've got extremes. You have out-and-out communist countries. And then you go down the level of extreme. You know, and that's something else that conservatives don't grasp. They have like this black and white view when it comes to quote unquote socialism. You know, that it's communism or it's America. It's one. And never mind the fact that America's already a socialist country. I mean, we hate so that. We hate socialism. We want to get back to 1776. Good. Let's ban Social Security. Keep your grubby hands off my Medicare and my Social Security, you commie. Wait, what? You know, but so I'm going to get off on a tangent if I don't keep myself reeled in on a topic here. So you look at Latin America, and it's some form of corrupt socialism on some extreme or the other. And you have to understand it's because that's what those people want. I mean, that's the form of government they have because that's what they can. That's their preference. So just using sticking that, we're going to, you know, because I got to keep it simple. We start getting off into what blacks want and what Middle Eastern people want. We're going to get, it's going to get too fuzzy here. So we're just going to focus on people from say, Mexico and Central America, from Latin America, as we call it. And they're going to always have a tendency to some form of corrupt socialism, some form of corrupt Gibbs, something like that. So as you get more of these people and they're outbreeding you like crazy, this is what you're going to get. So voter fraud is not going to be necessary. They're going to wind up voting for the most corrupt socialist leaning candidate. And unfortunately, we're not talking national socialism. We're talking some form of watered down communist level or even out and out communist level socialism here. Now, you say demographics, that's a two-headed snake here, too. You have to understand that works against you. Because on the one hand, yes, it's easy to focus on the fact that these people have a lot of kids. I mean, they do. They have large families. They reproduce a lot. And again, we're not even going to get off into the other races. We're just going to stay focused on people from Latin America for this topic because it proves the point. You can apply it to the other races as well. But we're going to focus on the Latin America angle to keep myself on topic as much as we can. So they tend to have large families. So they have large families. They out reproduce, you know, as say a typical family from Latin America has four kids. Some of them have nine, you know, a lot of them have nine, you know, but some of them may only have two. But for the most part, we're going to say on average, they have four kids where your average white couple has one or two because they're busy with a career and things such as that. So your average white family is having one kid, two kids, people from Latin America are having an average, say, of four. Well, the math isn't really hard to do here, but there's more to it than that. You know, people go, well, when we become a minority in our white nations, everything's going to hell. In a way, you kind of already are, because if you look at, you know, for those of you that are talking about real political change, when you discount the boomers, and no, I'm not going in, this isn't going into boomer bashing. I know you boomers that listen in, that are with it, that are awake. Yeah, I understand. You get sick of the boomer bashing, so we're not getting into that. But when you look at the boomer generation, the older generations, I mean, that's a big bulk of what accounts for white people in America. I mean, it is. I mean, if people talk about whites becoming a minority, yes, everybody focuses on, say, people from Latin America have large families, white people do not. But when you look at the older generation, that is such a large block of what constitutes white people, and they're going to die off. I mean, death is coming. I mean, I'm not trying to black pill you if you're an older person, but I mean, you know, the cycle of life goes on. It doesn't care. So as these people die off, that coupled with the fact that people, for our topic here, from Latin America have large families, white people do not, the replacement. So it's working at it. I guess what I'm trying to point out here is the demographics are working against you from two different directions. You've got a candle burning at both ends here. On the one side, white people don't have large families. These other people do. On the other side, what constitutes a bulk of the white population in America is old people, and they're going to eventually die off, and it's coming. And with that, look, the older people are, and I know, I believe me, I get it, boomers, but you have to understand, it's not just a boomer thing. The older people get, there's a reason why political change tends to come from younger generations, because younger generations always want to, you know, they're rebelling against the system, and that's always where the energy comes from. The older people are, and again, this isn't something unique to the boomer generation. The older people are, this is human nature is what I'm trying to say. It's human nature. The older people are, the harder it is for them to change their life view. If you've held a, when you're 25 years old, you don't have a life view yet. You think you do, but you don't, because you haven't been alive long enough. You haven't experienced enough. You don't have enough experience that you really have a set world view. And that's normal. That's not a put down. That's how it should be, because you should at least, even though, yeah, you have things, say if you're part of this and you're 25 years old and you're like, what are you talking about, Grandpa? I'm full fash here. You know, I mean, well, that's all fine and good. But I guarantee you there are parts of your views that are incorrect. I mean, 90% of them may be correct, but there's going to be at least 10% of what you think that's not right just because you haven't experienced enough. Even at my age, look, there's new information that comes on and you're like, oh, I hadn't considered that. I didn't realize that. And you have to, or you should at least be able to have an open mind to where you can incorporate this new information into your worldview and say, okay, well, this part, I need to adjust my view on that because I didn't realize this information over here. So now I can adjust that and get a little closer to the truth. But the point is, when you're 25 years old, I mean, your worldview is very dynamic. You have energy and you're more willing to overturn the system. You can look at the system with an eye of suspicion. But the older you get, when you know, flip that on the side, you're 65 years old and you've held the same worldview now for the last 40 years. And somebody comes along and says, no, you're completely wrong about that. Look, I present to you this new information that shows you're wrong. And the information is correct, by the way. The information you're presenting is correct. Look, that person's attached to that worldview. They've held that view for 40 years now. And you're going to come and tell them that you've been wrong for 40 years? If you go to somebody who's 25 years old and they've held their worldview and politics, for instance, say for 3 years, because before that, they just didn't give a shit about politics. They were doing other things that young people do. And you say, hey, your views on this that you've had for the last 3 years are incorrect. They're going to be a lot more able to accept this new information and go, oh, wow, crazy. Okay, yeah, that's good to know. Now I feel extra smart because I got this information that other people aren't woke to. But you take somebody that's held the same views, the same position for 40 years and say, hey, look, it's just going to be hard to the point of probably being for many, if not most, impossible for them to accept. So in a lot of the boomer bash, you have to understand this is a lot of that's just human nature. I mean, we get frustrated again with the boomers, but you have to understand these people are old. These people are old now, and they've held their views for 40 years, and it's just not realistic. If they were a different generation, if we were going back into time, I mean, look at George Lincoln Rockwell. I mean, he was speaking the same truths that we're speaking back in the 60s. Imagine that. So he was speaking to a completely different generation, and they wouldn't listen either. You know, I mean, the older people, the people that were in power at that time, I mean, they weren't the boomers. He was speaking to an entire, and they wouldn't listen either. So it's not necessarily even a unique thing to the boomer generation. It's just as people get older, it's going to be more difficult for them to change their worldview. In fact, like I say, almost impossible to the point that they'll just close their eyes and refuse to listen to anything because you're telling them you've been wrong for 40 years and now they're 60. When you're 65 years old, the last thing you want to do is overturn the status quo. I mean, you're in the twilight, you're entering into the winter years of your life, you're entering into the twilight years of your life. And yeah, I mean, if you're 65, let's be realistic. If you're 65 years old and you live to be 80, that's a good run. So, but you only have 15 years left. You're not looking for let's turn this thing over the next 15 years and look at complete societal chaos here. That's the last thing you want. You're old. You want to live your old rest of your few years out peacefully, in peace and quiet. And that's human nature. That's not a put down. That's human nature. Everybody, hell, I'm not that old. But even I am sitting here going, yeah, oh God, you know, I mean, at this stage of my life, you know, looking at what lies ahead as we're witnessing societal collapse, we're seeing it now. We have mass shootings every week now. It's a weekly occurrence now. This is the new normal. We have mass shootings. We have all of this societal upheaval. Our government is becoming more and more corrupt by the day, and the corruption is open now. I mean, you look at this huge field of contenders for the Democrat Party, and it's a joke. I'm sorry. I mean, you know, I remember back in the 80s when Dukakis ran and everybody made fun of Dukakis, you know, the tank. There he is sitting in the tank looking like a dweeb in the tank. But the guy was a more serious candidate than anybody that's running on the Democrat ticket now. I mean, the most serious person the Democrats have on their ticket right now is creepy Joe Biden, who has multiple pictures in public of virtually creeping out and groping little girls. And everybody's okay with it because look at the rest of these clowns. Look at the rest of these clowns. You have the butt plug guy with his husband, the homo couple. That's going to be, you have Beto O'Rourke, who couldn't beat Ted Cruz, by the way, and everybody hates Ted Cruz, and O'Rourke couldn't beat Cruz, and everybody hates Ted Cruz. We've got all these various levels of losers and clowns running on the Democrat ticket. It's not even serious anymore. So you're looking at your societal breakdown. There's the corruption. The Congress doesn't do anything anymore. Congress has forgotten completely, and no, this didn't just start recently. This has been coming over years, and it's built up over years. The Congress hasn't done its job in a long time. And now they're taking a stab at being the judicial branch. Congress is now LARPing as though they are the judicial branch. They can't pass a budget. You know, they don't pass any actual meaningful laws that improve the citizenry life. They hold hearings and issue subpoenas and act as though they're the judicial branch. That's what they do. So you see this ongoing societal breakdown. And I mean, I don't like it. I don't. I had my choice. I would like for things to be quiet and smooth and going along great, is because I'm getting slowly getting up into years. Well, slowly, it's going by fast. I'm getting up into years myself. So as somebody that the older they get, the more difficult or even impossible it's going to be to get these people to latch on to a brand new political ideology to overturn their incorrect worldview. It doesn't matter. It's incorrect. And I know it's frustrating because you present facts to these people and you hammer them with the facts. You have to understand, a large portion of the white population, because they're old, is not going to be able to accept these facts. Is the Holocaust a huge hoax? Yes, it is. You're not going to convince somebody that's 70 years old that the Holocaust is a hoax. You're not going to convince them of that because they've believed it their entire lives. You're asking them to accept the fact that they've been fooled their entire lives. It makes them feel stupid. And they're just cemented. They're just, you know, like the old saying, can't teach an old dog new tricks. The older people get, the more set in their ways. You're not going to use that's. And when you understand that so much of the bulk of the white population is consistent of old people, you're not going to get them to change it. That's why you run into the walls you're getting with your people waking up. So much of your people are old people. They're not going to change their ways. And so you have to take so much of the older people out of the equation. And guess what? Once you take them out of the equation, you're already a minority in your country. Congratulations. You don't have to wait till 2040 or whenever the official crossing point is to where white people are a minority in your country. You don't have to wait till then, because really, in a lot of ways, you are, once you discount the older people. And for, by and large, and again, I'm not insulting you if you're an older person, you listen to the show. I mean, it's fine. We're glad to have you. And we're not saying you're worthless or anything like that. But by and large, and again, this isn't a boomer bashing thing. If it was a completely different generation, it wouldn't matter, because the older people get this is the way it is. So once you discount the older generation, and by and large, you can do that because they're not going to upset the apple cart. It doesn't matter how much intentional self-deceit they have to use. It doesn't matter. They're going to believe that things will be okay and they can run out the clock. They're going to do that. So once you discount those people out of the equation, and you by and large, again, you can, it's reasonable to write them off, so as to speak, because they're just not going to. It's just human nature. Once you write them off, congratulations, you already are a minority in your country. And I tell you this, I'm telling you this not to discourage you, not to black pill you or make you feel, you know, like there's no point. It's actually the opposite. It's so easy to get frustrated. It's so easy to get frustrated trying to, if you're trying to quote unquote wake people up. You need to understand a lot of the people, they're not going to. The bulk of them aren't going to. You have to understand the reality of your situation. trying to wake up the older generation is you're banging your head against the wall. And again, it wouldn't matter if they were boomers or not. It's just human nature. As people get older, they're only going to accept so much. If somebody, yes, there are people who will accept it, but it's that's a unique thing. By and large, the older people get, they're not going to change views that they've held for years and years. The point is to make you understand that there's no point in getting frustrated. And there's no point. One of the things I really hate, and I'm looking at the clock, we got to get wrapped up here, get into this week's sermon, because I'm going to try to cover a couple things this week. The thing is, look, there's no point in getting frustrated. And one of the things that I really hate in this life is wasting my time. I loathe the idea of wasting my time. It's something that really pisses me off. And I think it's because I'm getting up in age. You know, I'm in my 50s. I'm not in my 60s. But that's right. I'm Gen X. So we just sit back and watch it burn. But the older you get, the more you realize that time is precious. And I hate wasting my time. I do. I hate it. I do not like undertaking something that I feel is a waste of time. As soon as I feel like something I'm doing is a waste of time, I chuck it and move on to something else because I don't like wasting my time. I don't like beating my head against a wall. I don't like doing any of that thing. I don't. So you need to realize that a lot of the frustration you feel is because you were wasting your time trying to spend it on the older generation because it's not going to happen. It's the place in the East. That's one of the reasons, by the way, and we're going to wrap it up on this note. You have to understand, the reason we're kicked off of platforms like Twitter and Facebook isn't because of our political views. Let me rephrase that. The reason we're kicked off these platforms isn't because we offend the leftists. Because the leftists, by and large, yes, there's older leftists, but the leftists, by and large, a lot of them are younger people, millennials, for instance. The reason we are kicked off that platform isn't because they're like trying to protect them. It's because they don't want our message reaching these younger people. You know, it isn't because we're not bringing younger people a message of failed conservatism. We're bringing younger people a message of something new. We're bringing younger people a message. Look, a lot of what the leftists, you know, if we could ever get them past their incorrect view that all races are the same and get them to understand that, look, we're not wanting to wipe out other races or anything like that. Once we get them to accept the reality that, you know, all the races aren't the same and actually get to the core of some of the things we believe in, I think these people are winnable. I believe they could really embrace a lot of our views because our views are not the caricature that our enemies paint. There's a reason our enemies paint this cartoon character of who we are because they don't want their own foot soldiers. They don't want them hearing what our views are. They just want them to look at the cartoon character, the little puppet they create and they dance around out there. They want them to look at that. They don't want them to seriously listen to our positions because they say, well, once you take the lie that all the races are the same and you can create multicultural utopia and you get to the core of our belief system, we're anti-corporation. I don't like big corporations. I don't think they should be allowed to exist. I don't like, you know, I don't think people should have to be bankrupt and poor just because they get sick and have to go to the doctor. You get down to the core. I think workers should be paid for their work instead of exploited. But this gets into immigration and why they keep the labor pool depressed and things such as it. If we could get them past that, they could be open to our ideas. Folks, this is why they ban you off of these platforms. It's not to create a safe space. Well, it is. It's not to create a safe space because Twitter and those people, the people that run Twitter, are afraid that you're going to offend leftists. They're afraid that you're going to reach leftists. We got to wrap up the normal visit discussion. Went a little long. We're going to go ahead and get into this week's sermon. Those of you who ain't sticking around for the sermon, thank you for joining us. We'll see you next week. Let's get on in here. Fill those pews. We got a lot to discuss. Let's get into this week's sermon. Fill the pews in this week's main sermon part of course, the point of the show, the Church of the Lampshade. And as you get in here and get comfortable for this week's sermon, as you know, we've been doing our Meaning of Life series, going through the book of Ecclesiastes. I think we're going to take a break from that this week. If we have time, we may get into it a little bit at the end of the show, but we kind of were a little late getting in this week, so I don't know. If not, we'll probably continue that next week. So don't worry, we're going to eventually get entirely through the book of Ecclesiastes. I had a few of you kind of reach out with some questions on that, you know, and I'm like, it'll be clear as we go through, because we're early on. We're just in the first couple of chapters or so. So a lot of the questions that some of you have approached me with, it'll be clear by the time we finish going through the book. We got a whole book to go through. So it's not a long book, and I think it'll all kind of be clear to you. But I wanted to do something a little different this week. Kind of, and I said that early on, we would kind of do this on and off, and we might do it several weeks in a row, then we may skip for a week or so. But we'll keep going back to it. It kind of gives us a base to work from. I think it'll be a fun, meaningful thing. And a lot of you, like I say, who've contacted me, you're already enjoying the series. So we'll continue with that. If by any chance we have a chance to get to it today, we will. I kind of don't think we're going to, because we're kind of running long here. I wanted to do something else, and this got me thinking. What got me thinking about that, if you haven't been catching it, you've been missing out. Every Friday on the Daily Nationalist, I've been sitting in with Sven Longshanks, and it's been just a real pleasure, by the way, to get to record with Sven. It reminds me, always reminds me, of the old Aryan Radio Aryan Roundtable days. We used to have three of us sit around and do a show, and it was always a lot of fun. The third person kind of rotated in and out. I went several different, but it was fun. I always enjoyed it, and Sven's just a pleasure to record with. I mean, I've done shows with different people and stuff, and recording a show, doing a show with Sven is just like, I don't know, putting on your most comfortable pajama. You know what you're going to get. And I mean, there's no, you know, you're going to get the height of professionalism, and you know he's going to be prepared. And it's just a lot of fun. So if you haven't been catching the Friday editions of the Daily Nationalist, you're missing out, because it's a short show, generally around 30 minutes or so long. And we just cover a topic for the week. And it's a grin. If you're missing out, you're missing out on a double shot of Lampshade, if nothing else. So that in and of itself is reason to be tuning into Friday Daily Nationalist. But aside from plugging the show for Friday, our last show on Friday, we were discussing a case of a child, and you'll have to listen to the show. We're not going to get into all the details, but basically this teacher took it upon themselves to decide these people's son was transgender. The son's 8 years old, by the way, and the kid was using the staff bathroom, and this teacher's like, instead of being like, well, maybe the kid's being bullied in the bathroom, or maybe the kid's got a medical issue, maybe I should just ask the kid, hey, why are you wanting to use the staff bathroom instead of the student bathroom? This teacher took it upon herself to decide the kid's tranny, and started subjecting this kid to all this tranny stuff. But the point is, in this discussion, Sven brought up, I believe it was in Britain, that they were trying to push a lot of this tranny. They're trying to push a lot of this transgenderism stuff into the schools. And just in passing, he brought up the point that the Muslims, and again, I believe it was in Britain. It was just kind of an in passing thing he brought it up. But the Muslims threw a fit. They were out in the streets raising hell. It's like, no, you're not. You're not doing this. You're not. This is against Allah, you know. And they were throwing a fit in the streets, basically doing what they do. And and I'm sure the government backed off. We didn't really get off into that end of it, but I thought that that piqued my curiosity. And I got to thinking about the fact that, I think I said it during the show, where were the Christians? Where are the Christians raising hell about, no, you're not pushing this on our kids? Well, they're sitting there abiding by what they think the social narrative is. And I thought this would be a good jumping off point to make people understand. Because you have to understand, when God judges, when it comes to judgment, and we've talked about that again, there's a lot of things we hit that we've talked about before, and if some of us, like, we covered this, but you understand that we've always got new people coming in, and there's a certain value to repetition, so bear with it. You have to understand, when it comes to judgment, God, because there's judgment, there is the judgment. When the game is over, God rolls up says, okay, I'm closing this experiment down, and we're going to have the judgment. But he also exercises little judgment. Okay, a little judgment. There's episodes of judgment that God does in this world as we travel along the path of this life. It's not the judgment. He doesn't end the game and judge the entire world, but there are judgments. He does little judgments between people, and I think it'll be clear as we go along. Let's go ahead and jump into scripture to kind of hammer this point home. Let's do 1 Peter, and we're going to be doing several scripture readings, so try to keep up. 1 Peter chapter 4, let's do verse 17. For the time is come that judgment must begin at the house of God. And if it first begin at us, what shall the end be of them that obey not the gospel of God? You have to understand, when God does a judgment in this world, he starts with those who claim to be his people. I've seen it. Trust me. This is how it works. When God is exercising a judgment, not the judgment, but a judgment in this world, be it in a group of people, in a community, or a nation, he starts with those who claim to be his people. That's where he starts. He's going to get to the wicked are easy, because the thing is, the wicked are easy. God, are, yeah, that's an easy judgment. They're out here. They don't accept any truth. They're ungodly children of Satan. That's an easy judgment. So God starts with those who claim to be his people. And what you have to understand is that God has no problem using those who are nothing to do with him. Okay. He has no problem using those who are out here as a weapon of his judgment. Where are we going with this? So we look at this transgender story that kind of got me started on this. And I was thinking about the fact of how, say, Britain, you have all these Muslims. I'm Londonistan. You know, we have all these Muslims. And they're here. And they're the only ones that stand up and raise hell and say, you're not doing this to our kids. The Muslims, the voice of reason on this particular topic. You have the Muslims who are the only ones that have the nads to stand up and put their foot down and say, no, where are the Christians? They're too busy getting along. They're too busy being tolerant. They're too busy embracing new things. They're too busy being not offending anybody. Muslims don't give a shit about offending anybody. It's against the Quran, it's against their beliefs. They'll be damned if they're going to lay down and go toss their beliefs, what are supposed to be their beliefs, over the side to get along. No, you're not. I mean, that's a line they won't cross. The modern church has no lines anymore. Let's explore this further. Let's go to the book of Jeremiah. We're going to read a little bit from chapter 7, then we're going to skip ahead, and I think I can make sense of this. We'll start at the first. Jeremiah. We're jumping over to Jeremiah chapter 7. The word of the Lord came to Jeremiah from the Lord, saying, stand in the gate of the Lord's house and proclaim there this word, and say, hear the word of the Lord, that ye of Judah, that enter in at these gates to worship the Lord. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, amend your ways and your doings, and I will cause you to dwell in this place. Here's the carrot part. The stick will be up here in a minute. Trust ye not in the lying words, saying, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord are these. Everything's going to be okay. God has got our back. For if ye throughly amend your ways and your doings, if ye throughly execute judgment between a man and his neighbor, if ye oppress not the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, and shed not innocent blood in this place, neither walk after other gods to your hurt. Justice. Where's the justice? You got to be judging fairly between people. You can't be treating people unjustly because you have power over them. You can't be shedding innocent blood just because it furthers your own selfish goals. Then will I cause you to dwell in this place in the land that I gave to your fathers forever and ever. That was a big if, wasn't it? Behold, ye trust in lying words that cannot profit. Let me tell you what, the modern cuck church is so full of lying words that ye not profit from. Everything's going to be fine. The temple, it's the same thing over and over again. Just if you've been sticking with us through our Meaning of Life series, you know, for the book of Ecclesiastes, there's nothing new under the sun. You look at the modern cuck church and this looks like a new thing. Go back. You know, these things are all circular. Nothing new under the sun. Will ye steal, murder, and commit adultery and swear falsely? Slandering people, and burn incense unto Baal, and walk after other gods whom ye know not, and come and stand before me in this house which is called by my name, and say, we're delivered to do all these abominations. It's funny when people sit there and say, well, the New Testament used too much as an excuse to is like embrace sin. Like you can do all these things. You know, it's used as an excuse to get away from the Old Testament. But here we are in the Old Testament and we're reading this account in the book of Jeremiah. And guess what? It was the same shit. They didn't have Christianity there, but it was the same thing. Well, the house of the Lord, the temple of the Lord's here. We're covered. In these people's mind, they look out at these enemies that are going to be brought against them, namely the Babylonians. And they look at these people and they're like, we've got the temple of the Lord here. The Babylonians chase after, they worship a sun god or some shit. You know, they're not us. I mean, yeah, surely we're doing child sacrifice here, and we have all of these idols set up. We chase all of these other gods, but we still have the temple of the Lord here. So we've got more going for us than those Babylonian assholes, don't we? Now, let's stick to the book of Jeremiah, but we're going to skip ahead. We're skipping ahead now to chapter 27, verse 6. That's right, in the Church of the Lampshade, you got to be ready to keep up. Chapter 27, verse 6. And now have I given all these lands into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, my servant, and the beasts of the field have I given him also to serve him. And all nations shall serve him and his son's son until the very time of his land come. And then many nations and great kings shall serve themselves of him. When you understand that when the Lord does a judgment, he starts with those who claim to be his own people. You see, people say here in America, you say people, America's still the most Christian nation on the face of the earth. And people have this attitude that gives you an advantage. Yeah, you look around and your kids are your 8-year-olds are being shoved with sexual literature about transgenderism in their face and you do nothing. You sit around and you're okay with your churches performing homosexual marriages and having lesbian pastors and you're okay with all of that. But since you have some wooden crosses up and you have some buildings up that have the name church hung off of them, you think that, well, you look across at these Muslim countries and it is like, well, they worship an entirely different God. So, I mean, we're still better than that. The Lord has our back. And I'm telling you, it's all through the scripture. That is the opposite is the case. God has no problem whatsoever using a group that has nothing to do with him. Nothing to do with him at all. And subjugating you under that group to teach you a lesson. As we've already stated before, look, falling under the hand of God, coming into the hand of the Lord is a frightful thing. It's nothing to be taken lightly. When God's pissed, you have to understand the judgments he lays down. It starts with those who go around claiming to be his people. You're better off being a completely godless heathen running around out here doing whatever the hell, because he's going to get around to that. Don't worry. I mean, yeah, you're going to fall into the hand of the Lord, but you have to understand at the beginning when he starts with those who claim to be his people, and he's got no problem using outsiders to punish you. You sit there and wonder why London is Londonistan now. I mean, wasn't Britain a Christian nation too? If you set the politics aside for a minute and just strictly look at it from a scriptural point of view, from a Christian point of view, if Britain, for instance, was a Christian nation, then why is basically London now practically a part of the caliphate? Why would God allow a Christian nation to be ultimately subjugated by Islam? That doesn't seem intuitive at all, but you have to understand, judgments begin with those who take that title, and it's no different for America. It's no different for any other nation that proclaims itself to be a Christian nation. God begins judging with you. Now, if you've got your shit together, and you really are, and you're trying to uphold what's right, you're doing, and again, back to what we've already covered in Scripture, what does it mean? It doesn't mean lip service. It doesn't mean offering the right sacrifice. It doesn't mean offering the correct prayers. God, well, you want to know what God is looking for? We've already read it right here. Correct. Treating people, judging people fairly. Justice. Where's the justice in this nation? Were people treated fairly? If you have money, you could probably do a public sacrifice out on the sidewalk and get parole. Where's the justice? There is no justice. They shed innocent blood continuously. They got no problem killing somebody that gets in the way of their power. You know, look at the greed. Look at all of these things in our nations now. But yeah, but look at the horrible things the Muslims do in there. Yeah, because God doesn't give a shit about them. God doesn't care what Muslims do in their Muslim nations. There's a reason they're here now. There's somebody there. What does it say? What is God's judgment going to look like when the Muslims are coming closer to behaving under the standards of the Lord than those who are claiming to be God's people? Is it becoming more clear for you now? This is why I believe the work we're doing here in the Church of the Lampshade Show, in these sermons, is important. This is a spiritual battle we are in, folks. If you don't grasp that, and if you're just one of the non-believers and you stay tuned for this part because you think some of the stuff I say is funny, that's all fine and good. But you have to understand, this is a spiritual battle, and I 100% believe that is a spiritual battle. What you are seeing is things being carried out. Yes, they're happening in this realm, but it is also happening in the spiritual realm. This is all, it all is swirling around and working together. I've seen people say, look, you know, this talk of a Muslim caliphate winding up in America is just stupid. There's not enough of them. They laugh at it and they mock at it. And on his face, they're right. That looks true. I remember it's been a while. Somebody said, we are right. There ain't going to be no Muslim caliphate in America. There's not enough of them. Blah, blah, blah. My guns, my Second Amendment Constitution, my freedom, blah, 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 blah. All the same usual nonsense. Keep pissing God off and see what happens. The people then were like, Nebuchadnezzar ain't going to come here and start no shit. Which, come on. Keep claiming to be a Christian nation and keep pissing God off and see what happens. It is a dreadful thing to fall into the hand of the Lord when he is exacting judgment. Now, am I saying that God is going to hand your nations over to the Muslims? Not necessarily. Am I saying that it's not impossible? You bet. You look at so many of the nations in Europe now that are being flooded with these people. We all sit here and go, why did this happen? Well, because the Jews. Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, the Jews are definitely working towards it. But why? I mean, why if these are Christian nations, is God just standing back? I mean, where's the fire in the people? Where's the fire in the spirit? Exactly. Where is it? Where are the Christian sermons? I mean, you know, when the West invades a Muslim nation, you know, one of the, you know, they're in the mosque and they're firing the people up to fight the infidels and drive them out of their nation. Where are the Christian sermons about this? Where are the Christian sermons about in our nations about driving out the Muslim? There aren't any. No, they're about embracing them. Embracing the diversity, and please stay around because we're going to hold a lesbian wedding ceremony afterwards. We're going to celebrate these two guys adopting a small boy and pretend that we don't know where this is headed. Well, stay tuned afterwards. And I'm not saying that it's inevitable. But you need to understand that God's judgment starts with his own people. It always does. And he commits judgments that aren't the judgment, the big one at the end. But there are judgments. You'll see them in your life if you learn to look for them. There are times when God puts things into place and he exacts a judgment. And he begins with his people. And you know, you want to have your shit together when he does, when you realize that he's doing that. You want to have your shit. It doesn't mean you got to be perfect and God's going to be looking for some excuse to crush you. He's asking for the bare minimum. Treating people fairly. Where's the justice in your land? Where's the justice in your land? Why are people slandering one another? Why are people giving false witness against one another? Why are people greedy and the system is entirely corrupt? Where in all of this are God's people? Where are those who are speaking the truth? And how are they treated? You have to understand, Nebuchadnezzar was not a good dude. He was not like some great godly king that was more righteous than these other dudes. Not at all. And yet the Lord refers to him in this scripture as his servant. Nebuchadnezzar, my servant. Well, it wasn't because Nebuchadnezzar was like a godly great guy. It was horrible. Horrible, brutal king. But you see, he was God's servant. In other words, another way to look at that is he was God's tool. God's saying, I'm going to use this guy. You want to act godless? You want to chase after all these foreign gods that all these other foreigners chase after? You want to chase after your own lust? You want to shed the blood of the innocent? You want to bear false witness? You want to throw people in prison who've done no wrong? You want to cheat people? You want to cheat the widow out of her home? You want to throw the orphan out on the street? You want to do all of these injustices? Well, guess what? I'll give it to you good and hard. I will show you. You want to be over here? You want to take up the ways of the wicked? You want to take up the ways of these godless nations around you? Fine, I will hand you over to these godless nations, to the kings of these godless nations. That's what you want. That's what you lust after. One of the ways God loves to teach you a lesson is to give you what you ask for. When the people, when you're in the Old Testament, and we're running short on time, so I'm not going to quote the scripture here, but when you go back in the Old Testament, when the people, the first king that they were given was Saul. And what happened is they looked around and all the other nations had a king, and by golly, we need a king too. Because at that time, God would basically speak to the priests and tell them, go tell the people this is the way. And that was the way the nation was run. Essentially, I mean, again, we don't have time to sit here and go through that part, but it's an interesting thing to learn about. So God essentially was the king. I mean, God ruled the nation and things rocked along, but they looked around and they said, man, all these other nations got a king. We're the only ones that don't have a king. We need to have a king like everybody else. And you know what God did? God gave them what they asked for. And he told them, he'll send your young men off to die. He's going to take up a bunch of your stuff in taxes. You're going to be poorer for it. Your kids are going to get to die in war. But you know what? You want a king? You can have a king. One of the ways in which God brings about judgment is to give you exactly what it is you ask for. You want to chase after the ways of the world? You want to just throw your nation into debauchery? You want to chase after all of these things just like all these other people do? Good, you can have that. Good and hard. As we wrap up, the point you have to understand is so much of Christianity, as a Christian believer, you get to deal with these people that mock Christianity. And I've said this before, I'll continue to say, you have to understand why that is. Look at the modern cuck church. It deserves mockery. Look at the modern cuck church. What about it's even remotely Christian anymore? Of course it deserves mockery. Of course, unfortunately, they lump us in with these people. They lump the remnant in with this. They lump the remnant in with the modern cuck church, which isn't correct either. But you have to understand why that is. So they're still claiming to be Christian. And if you claim to be a follower of the Lord, if you claim to be a child of God through Christ, his judgments begin with you. Maybe we look at these people, we say modern cuck church has thrown all biblical principle, all standard, all justice, all righteousness. They've thrown the truth out the window. That's all well and good. That's true. But they're still claiming the title. So God's judgment starts right there. Would God use a completely a people that worship a whole nother God, that don't even worship him, as a weapon against those who claim to be his people? Absolutely. He absolutely would. I'm not saying that's the entirety of why you're seeing all these Muslims swarm into formerly Christian, formerly white nations. I'm not saying that's all of it, but believe me, it's a big part of it. Do not take God's judgment lightly. These are very serious things, and this is why I think it's very important as the remnant of Christianity that we speak these truths, that we look at this, because if you don't factor in this factor and just look at the surface things, you know, why is this happening? Why? Well, yeah, but you have to understand that, again, this is a spiritual battle. It's very much a spiritual battle that you're looking at taking place here. There's another layer of depth going on. And once you grasp that, these things make more sense to you. Because one of the things that frustrates you in life is when things are happening and you can't really grasp why. You don't understand why it's happening and you understand the nuances. The more of that you can grasp and understand, the less frustrating it's going to be for you. We got to wrap up, folks. I'm going to try to get back to our Meaning of Life Ecclesiastes series in the church next week. So we'll get back to that. We are going to get through that. I really wanted to kind of cover this message this week. I hope you got something out of it. I hope it was a blessing for you. Again, I continue to thank those who are supporting the work that we're doing here. It's very much appreciated, more than I can express to you. If you want to be a part of that, all that information is at the bottom of the page. So I do appreciate that, and I do appreciate hearing from all of you. We're going to wrap up again. Don't forget, you can also catch another shot of Lampshade every Friday with Sven Longshanks on the Daily Nationalist. So until then, and until next week, we'll see you right back here for the Church of the Lampshade.